I really wanted to emphasize today social entrepreneurship and do an overview of it and then talk about our hybrid model. And the reason I wanted to do this isn't because, you know, a lot of you have been around social entrepreneurship now for 3 years. I mean, it was in 2010 that Sam first really put the stake in the ground. And, you know, the book Bornstein, and some of you have read his book on how to change the world, Social Entrepreneurs and the Power of New Ideas. Some of you have read that book. Some of you have read other books, The Power of Unreasonable People, and on and on. There's so many of them out there now today on social entrepreneurship. In fact, I just read one over the last few days called Social Entrepreneurship for the 21st Century, Innovation Across Nonprofit, Private, and Public Sectors, which is a pretty heavy book. I'm not suggesting anyone go out there and read that unless you want to get entrenched. It sounded like, you know, when intellectuals write books, sometimes some of the wording that they use is beyond our you know, not necessarily, you know, what I would say. I could rummage through it, but I wouldn't recommend it for everybody to read because I think it would be burdensome in terms of, because it's so entrenched in intellectualism. But anyway, and that's what I would do to find the book I read over the last few days is one of those. But the concept of social entrepreneurship is important for us to really understand. And the more I went out there and worked with associates in the field, I realized that a lot of people don't really have a real good grasp of it. They look at it as, it's like a business model doing social good. And that's a, you know, if you want to be really brief in your description of it, perhaps that's what it is. But I think when you deal with people at different levels, you're going to have more information, and you're going to need to talk about it from a more of an intellectual premise, because it is a concept that's kind of a breakthrough concept. And of course, we've been doing great social work for years in charities, and we've been having great enterprise in for-profit industry for years. So those models have been around for hundreds of years. But the concept of social entrepreneurship is really rather new, just in the last 30, 40 years, and from a perspective of something that we acknowledge that exists. And what it is really, it's kind of an amoeba. It's kind of like it's a defined but yet undefined, because the definition of it spreads across so many boundaries, so it really encompasses a lot of different things. So let's talk about social entrepreneurship today, and I'm going to give you some references that will help you read more, and I'm also going to suggest to you that you put some time and energy around perhaps memorizing or getting some of that terminology down in a better fashion, because there are going to be people out there that say, well, what is this social entrepreneurship? Describe it to me. Give me some ideas. Can you give me some examples? And Tom's Shoes is really kind of the a far end of social entrepreneurship. The ones you might want to discuss are going to be other ones out there, and I'm going to give you some ideas of what you can use to describe that and use those other, you know, ideas to kind of show how social entrepreneurship has come of upence. In other words, it's expanding. It's not, you know how sometimes when a brand new concept comes into our world, it comes in a broad way, and over time it gets narrower and narrower? Well, the absolute opposite has happened with social entrepreneurship. With social entrepreneurship, the concept came in pretty defined, and all of a sudden it's become broader and broader. So it's further encompassing because people are applying social good to many different areas of enterprise to create social entrepreneurism. So it's really kind of expanded, and it's getting, if there's something I can definitely say after reading the book, there's a little bit more, you know, it's a murkiness to it. But I think that doesn't allow us to have the freedom of saying it's a confusing concept and I can't explain it. We don't want to use that kind of language. We want to be really on top of what this is because it's who we are. So let's run through and talk a little bit of history around social entrepreneurship. I'm going to share some new and different concepts with you, perhaps, that might help you understand it better. It might just confuse you more, hopefully not. But let's talk about social entrepreneurship, and then I'll give you, like I said, some references to go and learn more. The concept, really, when we first started talking about social entrepreneurship, we learned about Ashoka, A-S-H-O-K-A, and that's an organization that was set up by a gentleman whose name is Bill Drayton. And Bill Drayton was born in 1943. He was an incredibly intelligent man, is an incredibly intelligent man, had tremendous passion and a great heart for civic activism. So he, in 1980, and then at that point he was in his 30s, he committed himself fully to the idea of practice of creating a professional organization to promote the work of social entrepreneurs worldwide. And that's when he formulated the entity called Ashoka. And to learn about Ashoka and what they have done, that's really kind of the heart and soul of that book, How to Change the World, Social Entrepreneurship, which is by David Bornstein. And that book came out, I think, in 2006 or 2007. And if do you need to read the entire book? Well, that's an option, but you could also go and look at and write this down in your notes. Go back to my Monday call of June 28th, 2010. I did a book review of that book, and it's a number of pages long. It's probably 6 pages long, but it really talks and defines social entrepreneurship and what's fueling the change, what it takes to be social entrepreneurial, and it talks about Ashoka, so you can be more familiar with what Ashoka is all about. Not that Ashoka today is the number one entity reflecting social entrepreneurship, but it kind of put a stake in the ground in that pathway. And Bill Drayton's kind of look at kind of as a father, he's out there, people recognize him in the industry. But the important thing that also in that summary that I have in that outline are examples of great social entrepreneurs. And they go around the world. So they talk about India and they talk about Brazil and they talk about different Constantinople and Bulgaria. So there's a lot of different concepts in there about what has been done differently. And of course, we use Muhammad Yunus a lot as a social entrepreneur because he's probably one of the biggest figures recognized out there because he's gotten the most publicity. These other guys that are in the How to Change the World book didn't receive the Nobel Peace Prize. But there are two of them in 2004 and in 2006. Those two Nobel Peace Prizes were both for social entrepreneurs. So you can research that and talk about that as well. But it's important to know and get this down, and I think that outline is hugely important for people to use. Go back and you can read. I'm not suggesting anyone not read the book because I love to read and I'm an avid reader, but I know some of you aren't, and one of the benefits that I offer in my Monday calls is obviously outlines of books that I read. And of course, there's always a bent. If I write an outline compared to anyone else, it's always going to look different because we read through the sunglasses we wear. So it's a perception of what's important. What I value as important in the book is what I put down in the book reviews and what's most important to communicate to you, not necessarily what you might find most valuable in the book. So that's part of just doing book reviews. But go look at that and dig through it so that you have a greater understanding on social entrepreneurism as set forth in that book, How to Change the World, David Bornstein. It's a great one. But let's go back to Bill Drayton. Intriguingly enough, Bill, when he was putting Ashoka together, he made this commitment. He believed that social entrepreneurs were 1 in 10 million. I mean, he really believed that these kind of people really didn't come along very often. 1 in 10 million isn't a lot of people, right? And since 1980, he's worked with over 3,000 different social entrepreneurs across an enormous range of fields and geographies. So it's all, he's done everything from A to Z and helped so many of them in their path. But he said that he believed that the kind of social entrepreneurs that he was seeking, which is he's looking at social entrepreneurs, passionate, resourceful, system-changing, history-making, innovators who could unbalance static social, political, and economic equations. That's how he defined them. That's a social entrepreneur who's passionate, system-changing, history-making innovators who can unbalance static social, political, and economic equations. Those are the social entrepreneurs. And those are the people he was looking for. But notice his concept was going out and finding and supporting individuals who had that drive. So that's who Ashoka is. They become this resource model to allow the dreams to come true for these people who have this level of social consciousness. So we can look at who and what is a social entrepreneur today, and what are they? There are plenty of definitions out there. For some people, they look at it and they say, deep in their personality, social entrepreneurs are people who know from the time they're little that they are in this world to make it better in a very fundamental way. Other definitions say a social entrepreneur is somebody who shifts economic resources out of an area of lower and into an area of higher productivity and greater yield. I kind of like that because I think it is a shift. Social entrepreneurship is about shifting. It's about shifting wealth. It's not shifting wealth by taking away from those who have to give to those who don't have. It's about shifting wealth by, you know, teaching people how to fish, you know, creating greater dynamics in areas where the dynamics are dead or they're non-existent because of either some inequality of access to information or access to foods or access to energy or electricity or fresh water, whatever it might be. It's a shifting of capacity. Other people call entrepreneurs a disruptive and generative force for change in the economy, one who helps reform or revolutionizes the pattern of production. Yeah, because we're shifting, we're changing, we're reforming, we revolutionize. All of those are good words about social entrepreneurship. It's and we just continue to improve on products and available services that are out there in the marketplace today. So that's social entrepreneurship. The nature of the work that we do, obviously, is system changing, right? It's about being innovative and system changing. We talk about every day we're modifying an idea, we're seeing new opportunities, we're seeing nuances of problems and shifting and changing those. The term innovation is often used in defining social entrepreneurship. So innovation is a critical word that needs to become part of your and my vocabulary every day. We need to use the word innovative, innovation, and that's really what Manatech's about—an innovative way of ending global malnutrition. Incredibly creative way of doing it. No one else ever conceptualized using a revenue sharing based leverage model to end global malnutrition, but it's brilliant because it's perfect because it's tapping into people in an incredible way by incentivizing them. So, I mean, this is a beautiful concept of an innovation, and that's what Manatech is an innovative structure. It's a breakthrough innovation that no one else has thought of, no one else has put in place until Manatech has taken that position. Well, another reason why I think this information is seeping out into the public marketplace, into the public trading place, and that's why you see the stock taking off, because it's like a breath of fresh air. It's a newness out there of taking models that pre-existed. It's nothing, definitely not anything brand new. It's just taking. And that's why we call it a hybrid model. We're not creating any. We're creating something new because we're synergistically putting things together that have never been grouped together before. So therein lies the innovation. And that's what innovation is. It doesn't require inventing anything new. It can simply involve applying an existing idea in a new way or to a new solution, or existing ideas into a new way, a new model. So entrepreneurs don't have to be inventors. Manatech, clearly, our inventions, if anything, were nutrition and our foodstuffs. Entrepreneurs need not be inventors. They simply need to be creative in applying what others have invented. Just the idea of Tom's Shoes, taking the donation by consumption model, that's creative. You know, utilizing a mechanism that's working and applying it in a nutritional field, right? So it's the willingness to innovate that's the part of the modus operandi of what entrepreneurs are, and that's who we are. So innovation involves establishing new and better ways for accomplishing a worthwhile objective. That's a great quote, right? Innovation involves establishing new and better ways for accomplishing a worthwhile objective, and that comes right out of the book I read this weekend, Social Entrepreneurship for the 21st Century by Keohanes, Keohane. If you wanted to get that. But again, it's a heady book, so be ready for a lot of deep thought and deep reading and troubling over sentence by sentence, as I say, in some instances. I mean, it's pretty, I got through it, so it's clean reading, but it's a very deep thinking book. All right, so that's what the social, so everybody get it. We change systems, we change mechanisms, we're innovative, we're not, you know, it's not we're inventors, but we're innovative. And that's what makes social entrepreneurship what it is. What makes it social, right? Well, we can look at it and talk about distinguishing social entrepreneurship from from for-profit entrepreneurship, because in the past we're familiar with for-profit. And that's what it is. It's about, the question is answered in many ways, but it rests mostly on the idea that social entrepreneurship's primacy of social benefit or mission-related impact. That's a primacy. In other words, social entrepreneurs take it as number one. They put it as primary status is what? A mission-related impact. That's why the raising of the flag, M5M, it's why we put ourselves out there, our identity. It's why we wear these orange bands. It's why we are who we are. We are M5M. That's our company today. It's not, we don't walk around, in the past we said we're glyconutrients or we're Manatech and this is what we represent and we are network marketing, we are direct sales. No, today we're M5M. It is our identity, right? So our primacy of existence is a mission-related impact. So for companies, when you look at corporations, you know, the profits are essential for long-term scale and viability, right? In contrast, social entrepreneurs are working for companies, profits are essential for long-term scale and viability. So they have to have market working for their viability. In contrast, social entrepreneurs are working in areas of what? Market failure. Market failure. Markets have failed when 5 million children are dying all around our world. That means free enterprise economics have failed. They failed us in allowing this to happen. So it's not about markets working. It's about markets failure. And that's what social entrepreneurship goes after, is where markets are failing. Because they don't do a good job of valuing social improvements, public goods and harms and benefits for people who cannot afford to pay. And those are the elements that are essential to social entrepreneurship. It's what makes social entrepreneurship, are those concepts, right? So there's a distinction of us in terms of we're system changing, innovative, what makes us social, what makes us different. There's a great, and I wanted to highlight this to you because I'm going to talk a little bit about business schools and whatever, but there's a great book out there. You might think about this one as well. It looks like it's the most widely used textbook today on the subject. So I take it that it's, and without knowledge, because I didn't go and research all the business schools with the social entrepreneur programs, but it was stated in the book I read this weekend, was it's by Howard Stevenson. Let me give you the other author. There are a couple authors to it. There's about five. Jane Y. Skillern, Jim Austin, Herman Leonard, and Howard Stevenson. There are five people that wrote the book, and it's entitled Entrepreneurship in the Social Sector. It's dated 2007, and it's the most widely used textbook on the subject today. So, and what you know, all of the organizations that are led by social entrepreneurs today, they exhibit many of the virtues that are common in our commercial enterprise, too, that because we see, the, you know, just like Manatech, efficiency, dynamism, innovativeness, high performance, economic sustainability. Well, what are we doing for economic sustainability? We have an incredible revenue-sharing program, right? A revenue rewards program that makes it sustainable. That's economic sustainability. That's important. So a lot of those concepts are involved in social entrepreneurship as well, but typically associated with commercial enterprise or in entrepreneurship, and now also involved in social entrepreneurship. And you can see the nonprofit sector is now focusing on more entrepreneurial qualities versus transformation into businesses. And an example of that, I put in the outline today, was goodwill. We can say goodwill. Most of us, if we've known goodwill in the past, we've known them for an organization that did a lot of things like job training, employment placement, things like that in the marketplace. Today, their budget is $3.5 billion, and the majority of it is raised through their retail thrift stores. So they came out with economic sustainability in their own mechanism. so to be able to move forward with their social good, right? And so we see that happening, that more entrepreneurial qualities are being adopted by those programs that are you know, to support themselves. And social entrepreneurship movement in the United States really, you know, began in the nonprofit sector, because that's where we focus on market failures, right? The things that are broken, that's where nonprofits step in. And that social entrepreneurship movement remains focused on the entrepreneurial qualities of those kind of organizations rather than their transformation into businesses. In other words, we're not trying to make nonprofits business. We're trying to take on and bring on some of the business qualities into the nonprofit arena. So it's a transformation in that regard, entrepreneurial qualities into the nonprofit sector. And that's what we see. So it's just a great shift. The business sector has been seeing new, and then we see in the business sector, we also see a movement into social entrepreneurship, just like we are. That's us. We didn't come out of nonprofit. We came out of for-profit. Manitech is a for-profit company. And, of course, one of the major big, you know, Tom's Shoes is a classic case of that, for-profit sector and social and environmental causes to make a difference as their lead purpose of existence. And that Tom's Shoes is one, Manitech is another. You know, there are other ones out there as well, but those are the ones that are getting the most publicity these days. And it's a blessing to have that happen. So one thing I wanted to point out to people, too, that you might not be aware of is there's huge government involvement in social entrepreneurship as well, because there are social entrepreneurs that exist in government positions, and they are looking to build incentives and advance innovation in the social sector. And that's where they come out with these grant programs and funding programs to help social entrepreneurs as well. So government is not, you know, outside the realm of what we know as social entrepreneurship. They play an active role in incentivizing and advancing innovation in our world today as well in social entrepreneurship. So what is happening in the education on social entrepreneurship? I think it's very important for us to understand that. So what I did today is I copied an article on the back. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with it, but I want you to be aware of it. And it's an article that was just published in 2013, so it's recent information. The article's entitled The Rise of Social Entrepreneurship in Business Schools. And there are a bunch of charts in here. It talks about the history 20 years ago on two different business school campuses, a continent away, the seeds of social entrepreneurship were planted. So look at this movement just over 20 years. Right? I mean, it's pretty phenomenal what you see here. And it talks about, you know, they look at the initiative at Harvard Business School. So they pinpoint Harvard, and you can see the differences, the class cases and teaching notes produced in 1995 around social entrepreneurship and how many students were enrolled. 71 students were enrolled back in 1995. And participants in social enterprise career program, only 20 participants. Today at Harvard Business School, they have 607 cases and teaching notes produced. Over 600 students are enrolled in social entrepreneurship. And there's 221 participants in the career program coming. That's a tenfold increase in 16 years. And then it says courses at top MBA programs that include social benefit content. I mean, the increases between 2003 and 2009, the average increase in courses was 110% increase just in that very short period of 6 years. So you're seeing this advent of social entrepreneurship and social content is just across the board, you know, shooting off the charts. And they also have courses related to managing social sector organization. That, too, has gone up dramatically. Top schools offer twice as many courses on nonprofit management as they did in 2003. So you're seeing people are driven for social value. And so it's just those are good statistics to look at because it helps you, and you can use that article, maybe print that off and use it in discussing with people who have questions about, you know, where this country is going and what experience that we've had around it. That's terrific. There are other entities out there, independent organizations. One big one out there is Clinton CGI University, and no matter what your political beliefs are, that's an incredible university program. I think his daughter is now heading that up, and it's just huge how they just bring kids and students from all over the world that come in and they take on social causes, and they go out and they build commitments and get funding and to do this very much like Ashoka did, but on a more dramatic basis and not as selective. You notice how Ashoka is very selective in who they found, whereas in the Clinton University program, Global Initiative program, what he's trying to do is he's trying to build that heart and passion in people. So people are passionate for him. He's like, you know, helping them with funding and other methodology through university fundings as well. Universities are becoming part of this program across the, not just the United States, but around the world, to help fund some of their students in taking active roles in participating in social change. So it's just great to see all that happen. Covey's got a program for leadership out there. In fact, I almost joined it. I looked at it. It was so exciting. And it's about really getting involved in the different tiers of a society. You know, internationally, you can look at some of this information. It's fascinating how they know that in order to change a country, you can't just go in and be charity. You need to help change culture. You need to help change business. You need to help change family. You need to help change, you know, so there's many tiers of change that have to take place. And Covey's got a huge program for leadership that you can actually become a member of that and go be launched into foreign countries to work on programs to support them at these different levels. I think there's 7 levels that they attack. There are lots of nonprofits out there, of course, heavily involved in social entrepreneurship programs. Ashoka is still out there. 7 Mountain Strategies, in many ways looked at as a social entrepreneurship program as well. Well, of course, very religious-based in that regard, or spiritual-based. So, but there are a lot. I mean, there's endless numbers of entities out there that are involved in programs that are deemed to be social entrepreneurial in their base. So important to know that, and the movement is huge. People, we are just one little bitty part of that movement, but good, great to see how we fit in that whole overwhelming movement, as well as that we play an integral role in changing because we have a hybrid model. You know, it's a new model that we're casting. And I think that's what the importance of Manatech's going to be, is that we have this new model and how do other people duplicate this model. A reason why I've suggested to many people that I think, yes, we've changed the look of social entrepreneurship in a way by utilizing it through a revenue sharing mechanism, that a leveraged revenue-sharing mechanism to incentivize people. But I really think it's going to change direct sales, because I think that it's a perfect model to incentivize people to you know, change the world. And so it's just, I can see how this application, if properly managed, if properly taken forward, if we handle this with the kid gloves and the care and the understanding that we have of what we have is so special, I think we have the opportunity to truly change the world in hundreds of ways, because we can impact others to take on like causes. And what a blessing that would be, to be the forebearer of all that great news, to watch other entities do the same thing. Then you can really say change the world. I mean, and it's not that it's insignificant to take on malnutrition in children, but you know, that one cause is huge, and it's part of my heart, your heart. That's why you're associated with Manatech. But it's amazing to me the breadth of what we could really take on if we got USANA and we got, you know, all these other companies that were in direct sales to do the same thing. The changes we could affect in this world in the direct selling association is mind-boggling. So enough of my dreams. Let's go back to Earth. Okay, back to Earth. 3 case studies in the U.S. are great examples. There are a number of case studies out there, and a number of them were set forth, again, in the book that I read this weekend. And they talked about, a lot of you are familiar with these, probably. I wasn't as familiar with them, but I did get very familiar with them. Teach for America is an organization that the founder, Wendy Kopp, she founded and she started it. It was based on one undergraduate thesis she did at Princeton. And her whole belief was that if you take top college students and that were eager to find, you know, meaningful and career opportunities, if you got them to enter professions like teaching over more remunerative possibilities, that they could be, you know, these top college students could make a huge difference in the world of teaching if we could utilize them in schools in low-income communities. So at the age of 21, she raised $2.5 million. Her first funder was Ross Perot, who made $500,000 grant to her. And she went out and she launched her program. Isn't that cool? So there are people out there that are willing to finance you when you come up with great ideas. In the first year, in 1990, she placed 500 college students in schools in New York City, Los Angeles, New Orleans, Southern Louisiana, and Eastern North Carolina. That was her kickoff. And, of course, from its inception, it's been able to enlist some of the most promising future leaders in their movement. They've had phenomenal results. Today, 33,000 of these Teach for America students have now been utilized to impact over 33,000 participants have taught more than 3 million students in schools across the United States. So it's gigantic. From its small inception to where it's become today, Teach for America is huge. Again, social entrepreneurship in a huge way. And this is in the educational arena. Other ones in the educational arena included things like City Year. It was a movement that was started by some Harvard Law School roommates. Again, notice how many of these come out of college students, right? And they were focused on supporting people to build democracy through citizen service, civic leadership, and social entrepreneurship. So they were developing new leaders, and they have graduated more than 15,000 alumni since 1990, serving over 1 million children and completing more than 26 million hours of service. And they're currently working in 24 different cities across the United States, and they have two international affiliate sites now, one in Joburg, which is Johannesburg, South Africa, and one in London, England. And it's pretty neat to watch them, how they use private grants and corporate sponsorship. They were very careful to stay 50-50 balance between public and private financing so that they didn't become heavily government finance, because they didn't want the overthrows of government on their back. They wanted to be independent. And they're right now, they started morphing a little bit, and today they're now wholly dedicated to fighting national dropout crisis. That's their number one target. So they're doing school turnaround programs, and their new focus led them to creating a program called Diplomas Now to aid the lowest performing schools. And they just won a $30 million grant from the Department of Education. So they're doing incredibly well and making a gigantic difference in the world. Jumpstart's a program that was founded in 1993 by social entrepreneurs. They were, you know, these people started out of the Head Start program, and they ended up in building their own program called Jumpstart. And they have trained nearly 25,000 college students now and community volunteers to develop its program. It's making a huge difference, again, in the schools. It's the goal is to improve the literacy and social skills of children so that they can succeed in school. So it's like the Head Start program, but it's about tutors working with preschoolers, improving their literacy and social skills so they can succeed. And then Working Today was a great one as well, by Sarah Horowitz, that had to do with helping people keep up with the social safety net with all the labor policies changing so dramatically in our society today. And she launched what's called Portable Benefits Network, PBN, where people can take their benefits with them when they move on to new jobs. And it's just incredible. You know, I can read more and more and tell you more and more about her, but all these are great programs. And notice how almost every one of them that they're highlighting started in the early 1990s, because that's really when this whole movement really took off in an incredible way. The next part of the outline, I just told you a little bit about impact assessment, because that's a huge area. It's not something we're interested in, but it's important to know that in order to fund these things, they had to come up with more and better ways to analyze the impact that these social entrepreneurs are having in the world and in the communities and in their social services, whatever their social cause was. So they've developed all sorts of they've got now something called the social return on investment, and the impact analysis is pretty amazing, especially with the computer models that they built and the internet models has become very sophisticated in measuring and evaluating work that people are doing. But we need to be aware of that, because we need to be aware of what we're accomplishing and be keep on top of and tracing. And that's the importance of the pictures, how many children we're saving, the impact we're having. All of that needs to be highly publicized and kept well entrenched in tracking, so that we can reflect ourselves as being an institution that's on board with tracking the impact that we're having. And then the hybrid model of social entrepreneurism, let's jump in that, because we don't have much time left, but I wanted to walk through, and all of you familiar with this, because you've been seeing this on, you know, at different conventions and people speaking about it all the time. It's in the booklets. It's in one of our main three that we use in sharing today. You know, when we talk about sharing today, we sit down and we work through three documents, right? And we work through the M5M brochure, we work through the tear sheet with the income, and then we work through the document that's called Becoming a Champion. And in that document, Becoming a Champion, there's a whole page that talks about our hybrid model, the revolutionary new business model for fighting global problems, right? And that's what we have, is a hybrid model. And there are six categories from which this hybrid model is built. Now, if you can see my outline, I highlight four of them. And the reason I did that, it's not that all six don't apply. It's usually because when I talk to people, I really don't bring up the last two. I find that talking about UNICEF, about heart and passion, I think when you choose to help children dying of malnutrition, that shows enough heart and passion. We obviously have that inherent. We didn't go to UNICEF and take a model from them about heart and passion. So I think some of that in the Amazon one is a little stretching today, leverage commerce and buying power. We leverage commerce all the time. So, you know, it's the buying power on the internet and those kind of things, the massive amount that's done. I don't find that as thrilling as discussing the and scintillating as discussing the top four. So when I talk to people about the categories that make us a hybrid model, I usually really focus on four. Of course, Tom's Shoes is crucial. We talk about matching donation model, donation by consumption. That's a huge model, and that's why we isolate Tom's Shoes. When Bo goes out there and talks to people and say, hey, what's that? And he says, have you ever heard of Tom's Shoes? Because it's one of the models that we've taken from to formulate our hybrid model. And it's critical that we understand Tom's Shoes, we understand what it's about. That's why I put him as part of my presentation I'm doing today. It has got a picture of Blake Makowski and his quote that he had about what he's doing in his model and why it's working and how he sees it as disruptive for all business models going forward. An incredible guy, and incredible to understand his story, to know that at 26 is when he first went to Argentina. At 30, today he's 36, and he just shipped his 10 millionth shoe. That's pretty incredible process for a young man to go through, right? I can't imagine. I wasn't anywhere near that place at 36 years old, and I thought I had a successful career in law, but I didn't light a fire to what he's accomplished. And not that it's about would have, could have, should have, it's just the idea of what changes we can make when we apply ourselves. And we can do the same thing in our position we are with Manatech today in ending global malnutrition. Just take on the energy of Blake Makowski. This is your goal. This is my goal. This is my commitment. This is our commitment. This is who we are. And we need to step up like Blake did to make that difference. So matching donation model is huge. Use that when you're describing the Manatech's hybrid model. Talk about Apple disruptive technology. Why does that apply to us? Well, because Manatech very much did what Apple did. You know, Apple just went out there and they didn't care whether they were going to eat their own children. They formulated new models. They came out with the iPad knowing that their laptop sales would fail or fall off, or their iPod sale. I mean, they just have become creative and used disruptive technology to build. Manatech's done the same thing. Our disruptive technology is Nutriverus. From Nutriverus came PhytoBlend powder, right? The two of them kind of tied together, or should I say from PhytoBlend became Nutriverus, but the concept is that we're building better and better models. We have disruptive technology. We're changing the look of the horizon, and we believe in, we're not afraid of what it does to the underlying consumer-based products, because we know we're out there building something better. We're building something that the populace will want. And same as Apple, disruptive technology. And then three, direct sales. This is important because there are going to be people that challenge you, and I love that challenge. The direct sales is revenue sharing rewards program. That's all we took from direct sales. I mean, yes, Manitech used to be entrenched in direct sales for its first 19 years. But as we convert, as we put the stake in the ground in this weekend, we're revolutionizing who Manitech is. We're saying we're no longer direct sales. What do we have a like compensation model? That's the one piece we've taken out of the direct sales industry is the revenue sharing rewards program. Revenue sharing rewards program. Great languaging. Revenue sharing rewards program. We took that from direct sales. When people challenge you on that issue, we're not direct sales. Because direct sales is about what? It's about compensation. It's about making money. You sell, you make money. We're about saving children's lives. We're about saving children's lives. That's who we are. That's our identity. So that's what we do. We have tremendous breakthrough technology and products. We have the best. We have disruptive technology in glyconutrients. We have disruptive technology in Nutriveris. We have disruptive technology in PhytoBlend powder. Even our vitamin mineral is disruptive technology because who else is out there harvesting minerals from plants? You find them. Very few individual products with one mineral or two minerals, maybe, but a multivitamin that has 100% of the minerals harvested from plants, good luck. I mean, that's disruptive. Glycobiology is disruptive. PhytoBlend powder is disruptive. So we're involved in disruptive. We're involved in direct sales based on that. And when people say that to me, Mary Jo, isn't this network marketing? I say, no, I don't. You know, we've taken marketing of direct sales. We've taken the model, which I think is one of the most incredible models around in terms of incentivizing people, but we've taken an incentivized piece out of direct sales, their revenue sharing model, and we've implanted it into our hybrid model of social entrepreneurship. Because building the incentive to get people involved is crucial for this to really work. The public couldn't do it before. The private sector didn't do it. The government sector did never conquered malnutrition in kids. So this is a hybrid model to affect that change. Follow me? So that's what you want to talk about. The public didn't do it. The private sector didn't do it. The private companies, the entrepreneurial or the corporate world didn't do it. The government didn't do it. So we're left to do it through a model. And we need an incentive for people to be actively involved. And our incentive program that was built as part and parcel of the hybridization of this model came from direct sales. That's how you talk about it. And it works. You effectively need languaging that's going to allow people to look at you and go, oh, I get it. You took a great concept about how to incentivize people from this industry, but you're not part of that industry. Correct. That's who we are today. And then Grameen Bank, of course, the Grameen Bank I love to talk about because he's one of my favorite social entrepreneurs, is Muhammad Yunus. And to talk about what he did and his story, that's why I put his tape now in all my presentations, is that little tape, that piece of tape about Muhammad Yunus, because it's so impactful. And some of the terminology in there I use in my presentations when I talk to people. I said, if just one product, such as Ambertose, can make so many people have better health and bring such happiness in their life, why wouldn't I want to do it over and over again? And that's really what Muhammad Yunus says about if $27 could bring so much happiness in people's lives, why wouldn't I want to do it over and over again? I love it when he says that. It hits me. It's like a home run ball for me. So I love Grameen Bank. I love what they've done. They've changed the world. They're the number one solution. Microloans, the number one solution for global poverty is microloans. We want to be the number one solution for global malnutrition. And so there's a direct correlation between Grameen Bank and us from many levels, right? So exciting. So that's how you describe it. Okay, people, that's the last thing I put on the bottom was just language to get your heart and head ready. Articles, if you don't know about this, Lydia printed these for me. I had never seen them before. They're articles that came off of Navigate from Europe, and they're excellent. They're in the category called M5M, and I'm just telling you what they've done is they've taken the books and the articles and they've taken out quotes, and they're just great language quotes that you may want to get entrenched in your head or you want to utilize them for flyers or utilize them for different marketing that you might be doing. We're doing a huge program now around schools. We're just kicking it off we're at trials. We're doing a test run of it, and we've used a lot of this language in flyers to post on bulletin boards around college campuses. So there's just a lot of things. You can find a lot of great language in there. And then the How to Change the World, I already talked about. That's the outline on Manatrain from June 28, 2010. So that's it, people. I hope you enjoyed the call today. For some of you, maybe you can say, Mary Jo, I knew all this. For those of you who didn't have a better understanding, if this helped at all to give you a better understanding of social entrepreneurship, about where we are at Manatech in terms of taking this on, I just feel blessed that I was able to open up that information to you. But know that, you know, we need to step into who we are as a company, who we are as a person, who we are as a company, and then truly we can go out and educate the world on what this is all about. But if we don't step into that first knowledge, which is what I've, you know, laid the foundation today and gave you lots of materials to go after and pursue, then it's going to be very hard for us to be as effective as we can be when we approach the world, right? Okay, everybody, great. Any feedback? I probably lost everybody. I'm 10 minutes over.
Ah. Hey, Joe?
Yes?
I have a question.
Sure.
You were just recently talking about the direct sales that we are not, we just extracted that concept out of there.
Correct.
Does that mean we are no longer going to have that stamp of participation of the DSA?
I don't know if Manatech's taken that step, but I believe they're going to.
Is that, in your opinion, a good move not to have that recognition? I know we're not direct sales, but we won't even have any affiliation or anything to have to do with direct selling, selling that.
I think what it does is this. It puts a stake in the ground that, you know, don't come after us with all this. Are you network marketing? You get it? I mean, it gets rid of the negativity that is so entrenched in our society around that concept of that you're just trying to sell something to people. You can go, no, that's not who we are. All we've done is taken from the direct sales end of it, we've taken their revenue sharing model. Now, whether Manatech chooses to take the stamp off of DSA or not, I don't know what their intent is initially or long term on that. But I know that they really are declaring that we're not network marketing. That's not who
right.
we are. That's not our identity because we're a new we're a different model. Network marketing has a distinctive model. We're not that model. And
that
the
sense.
Reason we're not isn't because we don't give revenue sharing like a networking company does. It's because our sole purpose, our existence out here is we're out here and we're functioning on our mission, which is to end global malnutrition. That's our mission. So it's not, you don't find a company in network marketing saying, our mission statement is to end global malnutrition. That's not what their mission statement is.
Right.
You get it? It's not, what, does that help?
Yeah, that absolutely will separate us from direct sales. I mean,
right.
taking that off of us, I think, is a definitive fact that,
mm-hmm.
okay, we were once in DSA, and we
right.
have taken ourselves out of that arena.
Yeah.
We are not DSA.
Right. And I believe, and that's the way I respond to people, whether Manatech officially resigns from DSA or whatever, my languaging with people is we are not network marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have been in that model in the past, but this company has gone through a transformation process where we have now put our stake in the ground. We are, you know, a social entrepreneur company that's totally convicted on ending global malnutrition. That's our identity. Now, here's what we've chosen. We've chosen why we call ourselves a hybrid model is because we've chosen different parts of, we've chosen donation by consumption from Tom's Shoes. That doesn't make us Tom's Shoes. It just means we've taken an aspect of his model to incorporate in our hybrid model. We've taken disruptive technology around glycobiology, Nutriveras, eating up our own children, you know, our concept of we don't care if people stop taking these other products, we're building the best product in the marketplace, same like Apple. But we're not Apple Computer. We just took a model from them that to add to our, to make it part of who we are, right? And we took the, like the Grameen Bank, we took on that, a global we took on a global cause. But that doesn't make us Grameen Bank. It makes us, we tie ourselves into a social entrepreneur model that's a hybrid of many aspects that are some of the best aspects of these different entities. We pull them in to formulate Manatech today.
Exactly.
Great. Yeah, thank cool, you. Huh? Good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to talk about. You know, you guys are going to get, the one thing I can suggest to you is go out there and if we get out and do more sharing, you're going to start using some of this language, and you're going to stumble a little bit. You're not going to be perfect the first time or second time. But when you start using it, like I have, it is such a blessing to be out there and do that. Truly a blessing. So start using it and sharing it, and you'll see what I mean. And it works. People look at you, and they go, oh, I get it. Yeah, this makes sense. You know, they'll see it. Because you can talk about, you can say, well, give me somebody in direct sales, like Amway, you know. Is their number one purpose for existence to end global malnutrition or to fight global poverty? No. Their number one reason for existence is to bring money to people's pockets. They sell things so that people make money, and they incentivize them by building these revenue-sharing models. Well, the model's terrific, but we don't tie it. Our sole purpose isn't that people make money. Our sole purpose is that we can allow people to make money. We incentivize people so that we end global malnutrition. Totally different. Totally different model. Anyone else? Okay. Great question. Okay, everybody, have a great week, and remember all the announcements we made, and we'll get out to you. I will put together an outline in Branson, so I'll make that available even before my call. I think I did that maybe last year or the year before. I remember getting an outline out a week in advance, but I'll definitely do that because it'll help me get it done, so I don't have a backlog to get it done. And it's best to do it when it's fresh in your mind. So we'll get that done for you and in your hands by next Monday or Sunday night, maybe even. And I just love you and have a great week. And let's finish this period out with a bang. And I'm excited about everything that's happening at Manatech, as you can tell. And I can't wait to be in Branson and hopefully bring some of you guys maybe some live stuff or send some emails out to the Monday call group from our phones and things like that while we're there. But thanks, everybody. We love you. And we'll talk again in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.